We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interview Lottie and play a couple of her tunes, and also tunes by Annie Dolly and Theta Jinx. And at the end, I play an essay by Mark Porter Zasada called The One Versus the Many. But first, a quick calendar. There are three great LA venues that are starting up their season. LA Phil at LAPhil.com, LACO, Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra at LACO.org, and the Pantages at BroadwayInHollywood.com. All three have terrific shows coming up, so check them out. Now we're going to start the show with a tune by Lottie called In Bloom, Mystic Pete Chronicles.
Stop, so I feeling new, not missing you. I'm in bloom.
Mystic Pete here, September 20th, 2023. I am with Lottie. Hi, Lottie.
Hello, Pete.
L-O-T-T-I. There's a lot of power coming out of your mouth. How to put it? Well, I just saw, I guess, some video you had put on Instagram, and I went, who is this? This is like really good music. And I reached out, and you ended up being just this really friendly person, and the music is great, and I already played some on one of my shows, and now we're taking it to the next level. We're doing an interview. I have Lottie in studio.
Yay!
So talk to me. Tell me a little about yourself.
And so exciting. Wow. This is actually my first radio interview.
Well, you're going to get the Mystic Pete bump. You know, from here it's just going to be like take off. Rising star.
Rocket star.
Yeah.
And I just got back from doing my little Philippine tour slash trip, I guess 20 days ago, which still feels kind of recent. Yeah.
You grew up in the Philippines.
I grew up in the Philippines.
Kind of, you told me, kind of a rural location. And, you know, I've been to some of these places, and not only there, but in L.A., everybody dreams about coming to L.A. and be either being Kobe Bryant or being a rock star or something. But you're kind of on your way. You're just this had a dream or what? It all lined up, and here you are on the way up, and I'm catching you.
Thank you. I don't know. It didn't always feel like, you know, like I'm in LA, like especially just like thinking about my life. I grew up in the Philippines, and, you know, I had a plan. Singing was always like part of my DNA. As Filipinos, I feel we all sing.
Agreed. Point to any Filipino and say sing, and they will blow your mind.
Yes.
Okay.
If that's not the case, they'll probably dance. You know, like just very.
I don't want to say some bad stereotype, but it's very creative people.
Yeah, we're very talented, very creative. Yeah, but that wasn't like always the plan. I went to school in Bacolod. I grew up there. I graduated high school there. And my dad had, and my dad and mom both had been in the States while I was growing up. So I think that now that I'm like sharing my story a little bit more, I think that I've heard this story of like kids being left with the grandparents because the parents have to make a living somewhere. And, you know, I've held like a lot of like pain in that, just like not growing up with my parents and like them being here in America and not really having that relationship in the beginning of my life. Like every time, like it was me and my younger brother, we were like partners in crime. And then my grandma raised both of us.
Lola,
yeah. But we called her Mama.
Oh.
Just, yeah.
Okay.
Mama. Right. It was so sweet to get to visit
Working
her.
On my Tagalog chops here. Okay.
So yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Just Mama. Yeah. So we grew up like that. My parents were here. And my plan was just, you know, because I was kind of good in school in the Philippines. And so I thought that I was going to be like a doctor or someone in some kind of medical field. So I did that. I like applied to all of these universities. I was 16, 17, turning 17 when I graduated high school. But yeah, I had always been singing, like in singing contests, like wearing these big gowns, competing in church. I grew up singing in the choir, learned to play the piano there because I was born and raised in a Mormon church in the Philippines.
In a Mormon church, okay.
Yeah. And we had all these hymns, and I still think that they're pretty soulful. Just in the Mormon way, you know, but like going back, because my mom is still pretty religious, so I just like went with her one Sunday and sang the hymns, and in the singing I felt like the same spirit that I had felt before and that I do still feel when I sing and feel that I'm resonating mm-hmm. with myself or whoever is listening. Mm-hmm. But it was that familiar thing, and I was like, yeah, this is a big influence in my life.
It's interesting. I think there's a lot of conflicted feelings these days about the church and various aspects, but a lot of people found their voice in the church and sang in the church, and that's the reason why they're artists now. So, yeah. You know.
God is in the church. It's just, how do you find God, you know?
No, I don't think so. Oh, okay, maybe.
You know, like in the music, like in the community.
What a radical statement. What? God is actually...
Yeah, you know, like God is everywhere.
Yeah. Yes, on that level.
Yes. Good. God is in the music. God is in the community. God is in, you know, like the gossip even after. Because you're bonding with your friends and learning about, you know, each other's life lessons.
That's insightful. I like it. Right.
Yeah, that's what I learned from being over there. There's a lot of, some people call it magic. Some religious people call it God. But mm-hmm. it's that togetherness.
And that was the path that opened for you to find your voice, become a singer, and you could stand up in contests or on the dais pulpit and sing and feel all this power coming out of you.
I don't think it was that conscious. It was just a little forced at first. Like, you're a kid, you need to go, like, wear this and, you know, and, like, compete. And because everyone just sang. And if you had a voice, you needed to compete, you know?
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so that was just kind of part of the culture, and it wasn't this big Beyonce thing yet.
Yeah, it was just part of the culture. But I think I got my practice going up on stage and just singing. And I think it's kind of recent that I've actually found the voice that I'm most comfortable with, that I can sing even when I'm laying down or sitting or walking. Because singing before was more like a... like it had so much pressure. When someone says, I'm a singer, like all of a sudden you have to wear this hat and you have to sound a certain way. Mm-hmm. So it was probably like... 2 summers ago that I realized that, oh, singing is just my voice, is my breath, is me. It's just like breathing.
That's kind of recent where it really landed in your life in a strong way. Because, well, even the flyer I posted, so I played 2 songs on a couple shows ago, and just the picture I used, anybody who looks at that picture, this 1-inch, goes like, there's some power coming. You just like see it. And then I've watched some of your videos, and yeah, there's an emanation here. So that full throat came to you really in the last couple of years, like your voice, Lottie's voice.
Yeah, my voice that I feel, this is my voice, and I can sing any song with my voice.
And when I'm looking at these videos, there's this kind of an ecstasy coming over you. I mean, there's almost like this larger thing just like belting out of you. I mean, what is that?
It's the difference, I think, was that I actually don't know. I think that I just, that breakthrough was when I, sad to say, left my past partner. And that was like my... You know, when there's something inside, your inner voice just like knocking to be let out, and you don't listen to it, and you just suppress it, and you just, no, that's what you're asking is too hard. To share my voice, to like actually do what I want, that's a little too scary. I like where I'm at right now, and I'm comfortable, and I know where I'm going. And then you take the courage to listen to that and like do all the steps and like just break out, break free. And even though that's hard and painful, something comes out of it, was what I found. And I found my voice and the name Lottie.
We're allegedly talking about Lottie and you as a singer, but the deeper story here is finding our voice. And most people never find their voice. A few do. A few have to like torture it and twist it into some commercial thing so they can make money. But very few people can just really let the muse come through them and the spirit come through them and do their thing. Maybe they don't make money or maybe they become famous. We'll see what happens to you. But you've just connected it to something that artists deal with. No other people, and that's heartbreak. It's just artists feel that. No. Oh, well, maybe everybody feels that. But artists definitely go through heartbreak. We're sensitive people. We're empathic. And we tend to use it in our art. One, therapeutically, because we're just trying to process out all the pain. So, like, let's do a song about it.
Thank God it comes out that way.
Yeah, but it's also rich material because we're feeling suffering, but it's emotion, it's life. So let me just dig right into it.
Yeah.
Tell us what, because you're talking about this breakup already on social media. I don't want to pry, but tell us that journey through the dark night of the soul.
I think that I have this tendency of like being okay with many things. And I think, you know, like personally, I'm like resilient. And I think I also see that in the Filipino people, being a woman, just like almost like being trained by what was in the past to suffer through so much and to handle so much and to tolerate so much.
To be obedient, to be dutiful.
To be, yeah.
Don't complain.
Don't complain. Don't take up too much space. Don't do too much, okay? Just stay there. And yeah, in that relationship, I felt like I was being quote unquote good and just like doing what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, like, just like, okay, like I can live my life like this, I guess. But deep inside I was like, I know that there's more. I want more out of life. I want to experience, right? Like I've made it here in America somehow. And I just want to not stop yet with my life. And, you know, and then you figure out that you and this other person are maybe just not the fit. But you don't want to question that. You don't want to like zoom in too hard, because that, what does that mean? That means either I change, which is inevitable. Either I change or he changes so much. And that's so, that's inevitable when you like live with people in the same house. But there are glimpses when I'm just like by myself that I'm like, I don't like this person that I'm becoming. I remember that I was cooler than this. I don't want to say that this is where it ends. And so, you know, like slowly,
we kind of being put in a cage, like a golden cage now.
Yes.
Like a bird with pretty feathers, but it's
in a cage.
Trapped.
Yes. So it was 4 or 5 years of that. And yeah, deep inside, I was just like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. Maybe I'm not going to do it. Maybe something's going to change in me. And maybe I'll just like be okay and be happy and like truly believe that. That day never came. But I finally found some courage to like actually break out of it and do all these things. And I think out of that came all of these new findings, this new discovery of myself that I'm still writing. But, you know, it was just the beginning of me listening to myself, finally. And, like, me rewriting stories that I've heard before of people who maybe stay in relationship because they have to. But I don't have that. I don't have that. I shouldn't have that fear. I'm young. I'm in LA. I have two eyes and I have a functioning brain. I will be okay. It'll be scary, but I have to follow what I want.
Well, welcome to the Mystic Pete therapy session. And I'm actually training you here because when you're a big famous star, then you go on these self-confessional shows and talk about all the, like, the ghosts and the, you know, closet and so forth. So yes. We're getting you used to being a celebrity.
Yes.
And then they write a book on it and it sells a lot. But no, also,
we're just working out here.
There's practicing. Just the real person of Lottie, and then also the musician, the artist journey, and art and self and realization and knowledge doesn't always come from just thinking happy thoughts and drinking celery juice in the morning. At least for me, it's a lot of. The power I have has come through pain and suffering and sacrifice and any kind of idea that we want just a very pleasant life with lots of shiny trinkets and, you know, people that say nice things to us all the time. It's kind of a phony world. I mean, and I think it's before a lot of people to choose doing the right thing or doing the easy thing. What's comfortable and what dignifies you as a soul. And I like to think of myself as someone who generally will choose the right thing, and I'm okay with suffering. And it sounds like you chose, and you had to go through a lot of pain to deal with this very complicated, woven together situation.
Kind of have to, or else this is your end. I'm not ready for that. I'm not happy with that.
Well, if it was... It's a complicated question. If it was right to say goodbye, why was it so painful?
Because it was good. It was good and it served me and it served us for however long we were together. But I think that, like, me listening to that inner urging kind of serve both of us well, or maybe serving both of us well, because thinking back, it was just, I don't think that we were right for each other, and right is very like subjective, I guess, depends on who's saying it, but maybe I'll just say it for myself. I wasn't liking the person who I was becoming. And that was enough for me to say, I don't want this.
So I guess the point is, just because it's time to say goodbye, or even if you are the person initiating a breakup, doesn't mean that it's not going to be extremely painful.
Exactly. Of course it is.
Yeah, like, oh, I said goodbye so I can't feel sad and brokenhearted, and, you know, it's going to take me 3 years now to, like, gather my... No, sometimes that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Because there was something good and powerful and safe and a future to it, and, right?
Yeah, and choosing to say goodbye to that, to, like, go after yourself, yes.
And it's risky now, and, yeah, you just said you can depend on your two eyes and your brain and your own capacity, but it's a little bit more wild experience now, and you're more vulnerable. And I do want to, I've never really had this conversation for radio, but you're so open, such a gentle being, and your face is so open, and just that we're talking like this, I wanted to validate you. Thank you for being on it. But we're all going through this stuff, so why not talk about it on radio, right?
Yeah, right.
Good. Well, so then let's become adults a little bit. And so, some of the recent music you've come up with, I'm guessing, was really coming out of this breakup and this pain. Well, I played In Bloom and I played
Not Bad After All.
Right.
So it's interesting because There's always a lot of pain. But I think, I don't know if you've heard Casualty.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That song is about my parents' breakup and their divorce and the family falling apart. And then Not Bad After All was also about their divorce. But, you know, every time I see anything or, like, anyone's story, it's like, also my story. We all share the same story. You know, like, that losing of yourself because you've been with someone for too long and, you know, and having to say goodbye and, like, dealing with yourself and, like, oh, okay, this is not that scary. It's not too scary. It's not bad after all. Like, this being alone in myself. So it's kind of like that. It's like pain from the family, pain from, you know, like my own pain from the breakup. It's sometimes even like pain from, you know, like my girlfriend's stories. It's like all the same story in my mind. And these songs just kind of find themselves to me when I'm in that writing music zone.
Yeah, so there's something archetypical about these songs. In other words, it's a universal experience. It's symbolic. I mean, there's your own experience, and it may not all be literally true. You're also an artist and a storyteller. So, and that's the way it is with artists. It's not like they're story or their play is literally what happened to them, but they're in there someplace.
Yeah.
And we can exercise some license and create a good tune out of it.
Yeah.
From my understanding, the greatest predictor of mystical experience is trauma, is tragedy, is crisis. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is everything stops. Reality breaks apart. Everything that you were safe with and knew was stable is suddenly shaking. And in that moment of terrible pain, you know, trauma, you also can look at things newly. And it can feel like it's taking forever right now. Like this dysphoric, dystopic experience is endless and I can't get out of this nightmare. But there's also a magic about it. It may not feel good, but you may suddenly find, you know, you can astral travel or see the truth of reality clearer. And I don't know if you had that kind of mystical thing, but the artistic experience is very similar. Like when there's, you know, some breakage of reality, there's truth. And perhaps a lot of creativity can come in because we're not in this old organization and pattern anymore.
Exactly. It's like you're constantly evolving. You're like in the shell and you're safe and you like build your home and you have like all these nice furnitures and you're safe and you're safe and you're safe. And then you start to like feel this like small voice that you're like, I want to get out of this. This is not what I signed up for in the beginning. And then you start to trust in that voice and then you start to break. And then all of a sudden that you know, like there are all these cracks, but then also you're allowed to transform into whatever you want to be, into your next, you can transform. But then also it's painful. You're breaking, it's like what they say, growing pains. Like we always, I feel like, so focused on growth, but it hurts, you know? But as long as you choose to grow, that's going to be there, and that's going to be part of the equation, that's going to be part of the process. But also with that comes the gem, comes the token, comes the gift for working hard through that phase. And I just have to believe in that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've talked about more the art of music and the enchantment and the personal journey and revelation, which may be pain. But let's talk a little bit more about the craft of songwriting. Then, you know, you're a craftsman, you know, you could be a plumber, you have to know how to fit the joints together and how to write a song. Right. And I do like the songwriting. in Bloom, it's not a lot of lyrics, but somehow, I mean, that's one of the most transporting songs I've heard in a long time. I just, one of those songs I played on loop over and over and over and over because it just kind of took me out, took me to a place. I love that, and you rarely hear it. But
thank you.
So the production of it was clearly brilliant. How much of that is you, or are you working with other people?
I work with a lot of people. So with my name change to Lottie, I've decided this is not just my story. This is more of a your story, my story. We're all like relating in this. And as I, you know, as I became braver in that decision, I've been finding people that want to work with me, that I want to work with. So with In Bloom, producer's name is Jackson, Jackson Wise. He goes by Homie.
In LA?
In LA, yeah. But yeah, I was just feeling kind of weird and all messed up that day. And he was just like just playing
that's
around.
That's even in the word. That's
exactly.
The lyrics, right?
Yeah, and he was just like playing around with these synths and like this drum pattern. And then I think that we made that song in that same day. It was just like, oh, all right. Exactly this. So it's very playful.
Wait, so that song just kind of came out of that moment, that day. Just sing what you're feeling. And it was just kind of like incredible.
Yeah, like with many songs, it's kind of like play. You know, like whoever is in the room, in the studio, when it's like writing time, I feel like producer just comes up with a beat or whatever. And, you know, like I come up with like melodies and like ideas and feelings and all that, and we kind of like play for a little bit, and then, you know, I'm on the mic and it's recording, and a lot of the gems come out of that first two takes, and then you listen in and you kind of just like, this is what I hear, and the craft of songwriting is just shaping it so that it's like, yeah, this is the song. Until it feels right to you, everyone.
And so there's this improvisational element that you're very comfortable with.
Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely done that. But I've written a lot of songs. And some songs I'm spending hours and hours trying to find the right rhyme and the words that aren't just cliche. But, you know, finding like vital, interesting language. But sometimes it just like comes out.
Yeah. And we accept those songs. That's a very lucky day when that happens.
Yeah, and it can't really be canned and manufactured on command.
Cannot.
Because you have to go through 5 years and a breakup and a reassessment of self.
There was some work there.
And be burnt to the ground. And okay, let's go into the studio. And
play a little. There it is. Yeah, wow. We just need more permission to play. We're already going through so much. Something's going to come out if you're just open and you're around people that are also open and ready to play.
So these three songs, is that part of a bigger project, you think? Or
yeah, so I've just been releasing them one by one, like Casualty, October of last year, Did You Think, and then Not Bad After All.
Oh, yeah.
And then In Bloom, you know, it was like little by little, as because I'm independent artist and trying to like figure out like how can I source the money for this single. I don't want to just waste it without any kind of, you know, like marketing budget is the thing that I, you know, like want to have, but also not necessary, but also like these songs are gems. I want them to have some kind of backing so they can find the right people, and you know, my producers, myself, and everyone who's worked on the song doesn't feel like, there goes my energy, what did I do with it? You know? And
this is one of the hardest things that artists have to deal with, is you know, do backflips, turn yourself inside out, pour your heart into the creation, and then nothing. Crickets. The world, nobody cares. And it's just, it's extremely difficult.
Yeah. We just want connection. And I believe that if you pour your heart and soul and spirit into something and you're honest, that it will connect with somebody. And then when you don't get that, it's kind of like sad.
Mm.
It's like, I know that I should just move on to the next project, but I'm tired. Yeah.
So what's the bigger dream for Lottie? Big tour, big arena. I mean, no, what's
I want to,
what do you want in the next 5 years?
I want to actually sustain myself being an artist. Because right now my day job is, it's like I'm a per diem nurse. Sometimes I work, sometimes I don't at all. And I've kind of chosen it to be that way because A, I don't want to be in like hospital settings where my schedule is like fixed in 12 hours and exhausting. But I'm kind of like a, like an Uber driver for some facilities if they need. So that's been kind of working out before I left for the Philippines. Like I would tell them like, hey, I'm trying to get as much money as I can. If you need anybody, I'm going to be here. But also, you know, a relationship has developed because I had been doing this for a little bit. But coming back from the Philippines and being gone for 2 months, it's kind of like, I don't know if it's LA or what. It must be LA. It's like, have you forgotten about me? I'm still here and I need money again. But, you know, like the past 2 weeks, I've like been not working, which is stressful, but also like starting, trying to like believe and encourage myself, like universe is giving you some processing time. You've had a big trip. As long as you have some place to sleep and you've got some food, I think you're taken care of. So wow. just try to ease into this. You will be okay again. You will find yourself again, is what I keep telling myself. But it's hard. But we're here.
Yes. And, you know, this story is actually pretty common, that guy building your shelves turns out to be Harrison Ford. He was a carpenter. People have stories about Harrison Ford, like helping them do handyman work, or the RN catheterizing you may be, you know, the next big star. So yeah, that's what we do, making money until the room lights up.
Yes, it's exactly that.
Any closing words that you would like to tell Los Angeles and the world?
Whoa.
Your first time on radio, broadcast radio.
Big space. Wow, that's a lot of pressure, Pete.
Yes. It has to be pure wisdom.
Ultimate words. Any last final ultimatums? I think that I'll just say whatever I try to say to myself always. If I think that I'm, you know, being gentle with myself already, I can probably afford more. I can probably be a little kinder and a little more giving to myself. And that's it. And I think the world is just a rough place, especially these days, and we're expected to do so much and to be so much. And yeah, I think we just deserve a little bit of softness and allowings from our own selves.
Words a lot of people could live by. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Lottie.
We'll
catch you on the next rung of your ascendancy.
Amen. Go. Oh.
my whole life, yeah. Just gonna be me. You ain't gotta like me or anything. Swerving down the street, you ain't gotta like the way I go. Beep, beep. Finger in the air, flying way past you without a care. Don't get me wrong, still kill them with kindness. Not giving a is what I want, the mindset. Someone give you side eye, you give them a cold sweat. They just a troll, and they living on the internet. Tried being nice and things got out of hand. Puppies walking over me, but I turned into quicksand. If you being bullied, just be your own hype man. Stick up for yourself, refrain from the fighting. If they continue, seduce them with silence. Take up a high road because you are the highness. And break up with haters, cause bygones be bygones. And take on a new trend because you are an icon. Anyone ever born to be a fake one? Best is to give real communication. Shift your perspective and change up the station. Don't give a sh- plus more meditation. And now that they give you a standing ovation, I'm done being nice. Last time I did bitch, I paid the price. I'm trying to be mean. Don't need to explain myself or anything. I'm done being nice. Last time I did bitch, I paid the price. I'm trying to be mean. Don't need to explain myself or anything. Everyone that you meet fighting the old battle. Half the population is anxious example. For you think your kind words hurt all the cattle. Might wanna get off your high horse's saddle. Cause you about to feed them a toxic apple. Positive words only land on the paddle. Once it hits the water, it sinks with a satchel. Handle with care when dealing with a fragile. Don't make a fake salutation, it's travel. Actions speak louder than words on this channel. I'm done being nice. And last time I did, bitch, I paid the price. Yeah, I'm trying to be mean. I don't need to explain myself or anything. I'm done being nice. And last time I did, bitch, I paid the price. I'm trying to be mean. I don't need to explain myself or anything.
Cause This is Mark Porter Zasada with Staying Human, a search for the mystery, poetry, and sometimes beautiful conundrums of modern life. Today, I want to talk about something I call the problem of the one versus the many. Suppose for a moment that you are walking down the street, minding your own business, when you notice that a beautiful new flower has appeared in a neighbor's garden. A single new flower. Yellow. You don't know its name, but you wish you knew its name because in its solitude it seems to possess a kind of personality. You stoop to examine it more closely, smell to see if it has a scent. It's a wonderful experience, memorable even. You might take its picture, mention it to your significant other. Hey, take a walk down the street and see this flower. But then, the very next day, you find yourself walking a little further, and you pass a tall office tower. And out in front of that tall office tower, you see a bank of significant landscaping. And that landscaping includes 1,500 of the very same yellow flowers. This being mere landscaping, you might walk by without even noticing. But if you do notice it is the very same yellow flower, does it not diminish the joy of that first discovery in the neighbor's garden? If you stop and look, how likely is it that you think about the leaf structure of these flowers, their personality? I mean, before there was just one yellow flower, and now there are 1,500. Why isn't that better? If you are impressed by the spectacle, is it likely it will change you? Is it likely you will mention it to your significant other? Go and see the landscaping in front of that office tower half a mile from here. I doubt it. Why is this true? Why is a single flower more important to us than 1,500? I remember first thinking about the one versus many problem when I was a young man going down to the jewelry district in downtown Los Angeles to buy an engagement ring for my fiancée. I've told this story before, but it haunts me strangely, and it's so relevant here. The LA jewelry district, centered around Hill Street near 7th, is crowded with jewelry shops and booths, large and small, with diamonds and gold bands and banks of thousands of items, like landscaping. It's dizzying, and to walk into the shops hung with precious glitter is not always a heartening experience. It can put you off in a way that's much worse than landscaping. I finally chose a shop at random with an older shopkeeper, and I mumbled something indistinct. But he smiled. He said, "I have just the right thing for you." And without any hesitation, he reached down into the case holding literally hundreds of rings and chose one. A small ring with a single small diamond. He placed it on a bed of black velvet until it was alone and held it under a bright spotlight so that all the other glitter fell away. And in that moment, it became beautiful and assumed a personality. And I wanted it. Like all great shopkeepers, this man perfectly understood the problem of the one versus the many. I could give countless examples. Surely we've all experienced the blur of a large museum, the overwhelm of so much great art crowded into one place, so that we cease to care. People complain that when tourists go to the Louvre in Paris, they ignore a multitude of masterpieces to find their way to the Mona Lisa, where they crowd and gawk. Even though in the very same room are other pieces of important, historic, and genius-level art. People love to use this as an example of our fame-obsessed culture. They rag on these tourists for checking off the famous site of the Mona Lisa from their bucket list. But I don't blame these tourists in the least. They are seeking the one thing as opposed to the many. They are looking to form a relationship with an object they have been told seeks that relationship with them. It's natural. It's human. It's part of our desire to experience important, single things. And yes, I did this myself. I went and saw the Mona Lisa, straining to connect with her above the heads of the multitude. But of course, Among the countless examples of our struggle against the many, we suffer most from technology. Facebook, TikTok, X. You know that 15-second reel of a well-executed dance routine or gymnastic feat, which if you had paid $70 to sit in the audience for a one-off experience instead of a clutter of experiences flicked by your finger across your screen, might have meant something to you. I mean, there was always that possibility, right? Perhaps now eliminated. Perhaps now the very value of well-executed dance routines or gymnastics feats have been reduced for you, just a little, by the many versus the one problem. Here's the deal. The human mind, we have discovered, appears to be almost, but not quite, infinitely expandable. We can hold so many more images and stories than our ancestors ever thought possible. And now, what we cannot fully contain, the spillover from each person's 100 billion neurons, can be held forever on our behalf in data centers across the globe. And yet, there's a reason we often return to the same book over and over, or the same movie again and again, the same song. Despite the tens of thousands of other options and objects brought to us weekly, daily, hourly, streaming, or dropped on our porches. Surely there's a reason we hold close a few stories and tunes and images and objects which have, through long effort, become part of our identity. You know, the little life rafts we ride in the sea of unremitting content. The single flower separated from the herd, its personality well considered. The long view from the clifftop we return to again and again. The fully realized nights. The dance performance for itself, by itself. This has been Mark Portazasada with Staying Human. You can follow me at stayinghuman.net.
We are coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicle, so you can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interviewed Lottie, L-O-T-T-I. We actually started the show with her tune called In Bloom. Then after the interview, It's Not Personal. Then a tune by Annie Dolly, Done Being Nice. And then a tune by Theta Jinx with Anthony Alvarez off the album Bright Out and the Flower Bomb. This tune called Flower Bomb. And we just wrapped up the show with an essay by Mark Portazasada. This is the first of his series on the Mystic Pete Chronicles called Staying Human. This piece was called The One Versus the Many. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the very finest of talk radio. Mystic Pete out! Ooh.